And welcome to Coastside Musicians here on CoastsideBuzz.com. Today we're very fortunate to have with us Dr. Lisa Chu, and we are going to have a wonderful time with her. I've had a chance to look into her background a bit, and I think you're going to enjoy hearing from her. And to give you a little bit of a lead-in, she has a show coming up at the Half Moon Bay Library of her visit to Gettysburg, where she was a resident artist. And but we'll get to that later. First of all, welcome, Lisa, and
Thank you, Harry.
Are you ready for this?
I am.
All right. You know, normally, I ask people a bit about their background, and I'm going to do that a little differently, because I really want to start off with you as a three-year-old. And let's talk. What happened to you as a three-year-old?
Well, I was born and raised in the Chicago area, and a couple things about that. One is my parents are both immigrants from Taiwan, and so they came here really with dreams of a better life for their kids and themselves. And part of that was really providing us with every opportunity for education and enrichment that they could find. And we were lucky enough to live in an area where there was a great teacher who was starting all of her students at three. And she really believed in the potential that anyone could play well if they started early and had the right nurturing. So that's how I got started at that age. I take it for granted because I walked into an environment where there were just, you know, several hundred children from age 3 to 17 all playing violin in unison. And I thought that's what everyone did. So it's interesting for me now as I've, you know, gone on in life that it turns out that it's not everywhere and not everyone.
Well, I can appreciate that. We immigrated from Holland first, and mm-hmm. What's interesting is both my parents, they met each other playing in an orchestra. Mm-hmm. And what they wanted for my sister and I, if nothing else, was to get a college degree because mm-hmm. neither one of them had it. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about this. Here you are, this young little three-year-old playing the violin, and I've looked into it. You've played in some very fascinating venues, haven't you?
Yes. So part of that, you know, that school environment, the violin school, was that my teacher created a performing group that traveled around the world. So yes, when I was 8 years old, I played at Carnegie Hall. When I was 14, I played in Moscow for President Boris Yeltsin. We went on several other European concert tours during my time. And again, this was something that was a part of my life, and all of my peer group was around me, and we all did this together. So at the time, it wasn't a big deal, but you know, now I see that it was in a way.
You forgot your concert at the Vatican.
Oh yes, 1980, Pope John Paul II. Yes.
No, we're not too much here. Yeah, I wasn't kidding.
Church, Harry.
Well, thank you. Okay. So you went on and let's get on to your education a bit because first.
Yes, that was my undergraduate in sciences.
Uh huh. And now you are a doctor.
And then I went on to medical school. You know, yes. So that's kind of the continuation of that story. You know, my family's expectation. You mentioned that your parents had the dream of you getting in our family. Really, the assumption was that we would go to graduate school. That it was just it didn't end in college onto some kind of graduate school. So I never really had a passion for medicine. But I just knew what the expectation was in my family. And I also knew that I wouldn't be able to have total life until I fulfilled that. So that's really, you know, the truth about what me. And, you know, school very, natural, not really hard for me to do. So getting that degree was not the hardest in my life. The hardest thing I've done in my life, figuring out who. Be creative, live a life of creativity and creative expression, because there's no book about that and there's no school to teach you that. It's really about finding your own voice and having the courage to take action in alignment with that voice. So,
yeah, well, next step I want to go to, because it's unusual, you go from medical school to venture capital. Now tell us about that one.
Well, that was really about, you know, I was a middle of my third year of medical when you typically pick. I woke up one day, realized that I didn't have to choose of, you know, 20 or so specialties that they put as a medical student. And that's a huge realization because it's such a mentality. And, you know, it's a professional training school where there's a that you go down. But I felt drawn to any of it. And it was more pressure to choose from these. So when I woke up one day and said, oh, wow, I don't have to, that was huge. But then I remember going into this at University of Michigan and saying, I'm not going to do a residency. And, you know, and he said, that's great. We don't know how to help you. Wonderful. Have a nice essentially. Because they are in the bit of cultivating academic physicians. So that's sort of been the theme since then, which is find my own way. So unfortunately, mentors didn't just show up in my lap. But the reason I ended up in venture capital was really, it was the island. So, you know, being in this area in Silicon Valley, but I'd heard very sexy. It was like the things to be in a .com or to be in a venture in the industry. And also, frankly, I had to find something where I could make money right away to show that this crazy decision of leaving medicine was going to actually pay off in some way. So those kind of things aligned. And I also, you know, when I looked at venture capital, it looked like the kind of variety that I wanted in my work. And there's definitely a lot of variety where, you know, in terms of a business position. So those things appealed to me up in it.
Well, it's interesting because medical school and venture capital are very high G jobs, and you have to have a lot of stamina and, you know, the mental be able to deal with it, and especially with venture capital, because you may, you know, and you just start ask zeros before the decimal point, not after the decimal point.
Yeah, there are different kinds of challenges, I think. The challenges in medical school are both physical and mental. A lot of the training at that time is about proving how long you can stay, you know, how many hours in a row you can stay awake, sort of going through a hazing process. My experience in capital for a little over 3 years, and I feel very amazing that I worked with in the firm that I was with that was a Midwest-based firm there at that time for over 20 years, a lot of integrity. I was well by them. So my experience in venture capital, I think, you know, I was with one firm and I was with a really good group of people. And you probably will, how I left venture capital. I'll tell a little story and you can keep this or not, but it was a really one day actually out here in this area in Silicon Valley, talking to another person who had left medicine 15 years before and was now a venture capital partner in a major firm out here. And I was just, you know, trying to find mentors and make connections. And I remember him saying to me, what's your number, Lisa? And I said, what do you mean, what's my number? And he said, all of us have a number, 20 million, 50 million, 100 million. We're all in this business till we get to our number. Then we quit and do what we really want to do with our lives and follow our passions. And that really surprised me. I assumed that everyone in this high-powered, high-energy, high-profile were following their passions. That how could if this wasn't really what you wanted to do with your life? My idealistic view of the world is still there, but you know, I'm here. I wanted at that time. I imagined like writing the check Medtronic. You know, that was my idea of changing a world changing company at that time. But if you want to talk about and doing what you really want to do, if I had $20 million, I would open a violin school. And loud, and it was the first time I had actually heard myself say that out loud. And that was a dream that I was 3 or 4 years old. And I had never said it. But it, like, the thing that drove me in my studies as a child was sort of looking up to my violin teacher who could walk into a room just without saying anything. Everyone listened to her. And everyone looked. Somehow, she had this sort of magical presence. And that was something I wanted, I felt I could do somehow, and I wanted to do it. And I had, ever since being young, and I don't know why or, but I've always had a dream of living in California. So actually with that conversation with the college that I was on a plane to this area looking, I actually had a whole plan of how I would start a violin school. I wrote my PowerPoint presentation. I wrote my brochure for my school, and I was on a plane to California looking at places. I knew I wanted to come to this area somehow. And it wasn't about the tech scene. It wasn't about venture capital. It was like, it was actually 280, Highway 280, and that drive that convinced me that I had to. So it was the nature and in California that really drew me here. And I, within that conversation, I quit my venture capital job. And then I came to Menlo Park. And that fall, so that I moved here on Memorial Day of 2004. Fall, I started my school with two students. So, and
it's fantastic. I for someone to leave, had the insight to know where you wanted to be, you didn't want to be. You know, and then happen. So actually into the next thing, because after the violin, and there's a website I'm going to give people here for a website, and it's themusicwithin.com. Have I got that right?
Yes.
And I'm going to encourage a look at that. And also, a little jump, but another website, and I'll mention these again, ChineseMelodrama.com. That's when we get to the music part. But let's talk a little bit Chinese Melodrama about this.
Yeah, that was the name of the... And it's really interesting in this conversation right now. That was the name of the school that I launched in 2004, and I ran it for 6 years. Grew a great community of people and had a really amazing creating my own business. And so this gets to a story that maybe, I don't know if it's on any of my websites in its entirety, but you mentioned stamina, and I've always been a person with very high energy and a lot of enthusiasm for what I do. And what happened about between the fourth and the fifth year of that school was I started to get exhausted, which never happened to me before in my life. I always just pushed through things, and I kept pushing through things. If I got to the next milestone of success, I'd get better. So that was my strategy of succeeding. And that was my school, because I was really something I created. I wanted, I dreamed it, and I did it. And what happened so the fifth year of the school, I just really said, I don't know what to do anymore, going at the time. But I just side myself asked for what a render to whatever, and I didn't know what. And that next year, a whole flood of different experiences that were totally radically new in my life kind of happened, which was the opportunity to enroll at Institute of Integral Studies, Cisco, in a sound voice and music certificate program, which I'd never heard. I remember just seeing it in my email open house, and then during these sounds, the alumni and the course director changed my entire, I had never heard before. So I immediately enrolled, was going to get what was going to happen. And that fall, one of the component course was a weekend workshop on improvisation. I thought, great, paid and everything, but I don't need to really do anything with that, because I still had this identity as a classical musician. And I'd grown up with my teacher calling all other kinds of music essentially garbage, that we only need to learn the masters of classical and everything else is something else. So I had a very strong identity as classical. Improvisation was what other people did. So going to this workshop, I had no intention of participating. And in fact, I hide. And I was hiding behind the teacher, whose name was David Darling, was also classically trained and then went into improvisational music later in his life. But he was standing in front of me, the whole room of maybe 30 people, blues jam. And he turned around and pointed at me and said, "You, solo." And it was fear moment of my life, because I was in tears. I had no idea what to do. It was there for him to ask me to do this, because anything I was going to do was going to be embarrassed. Just had no idea. And he knew this, he's because of his own life. And he said, still, these are the most compassionate words that I've ever heard from a teacher. He said to me, "Wrong note." Struck me like lightning, and I didn't know still. I was like, great, which wrong note do I play? And so he took my finger, placed it on the fingerboard of my instrument, and he held it. He knew I wouldn't like the sound, because it wasn't like a classical note. And my arm wouldn't move. My bow arm would not move to make a sound. That whole moment, that snapshot, really see, obviously, today, words are still words that I'm, in a way, decoding in my life, what does it mean to play the wrong note? Especially for someone like me who's like, you know, as we started this interview, since the age of three, very directed, trained, and focused on something, on doing it the right way, what, you know, in quotes, you know, the way I was told was the right way. But when you're young, told something is right, you actually have no ability to question that, the validity of that. And so this was the door that to actually see that the standing up in front of my student, my own time, saying to them and saying right way was only one way. And so, and within 5 weeks of that, I closed my school because no longer play the role that I did for myself, which was Dr. Chu, standing room, looking perfect, makeup, hair, high heels, everything, teacher, saying, do it my way, believing that it's the right way, but knowing now that there's many ways. And so I didn't have a model. I didn't have a model for teaching young people or a way, and that's not what they did in. They didn't invest in an exploratory program. They invested in, you know, math, which I presented to them. So that was, you know, again, if you kind of take a rational view of it, it's not what somebody would want to do at that point, you know, 6 years into a business, like, no. And it was not parents in the school expected either. So that, in a way, jarring moment in life, but it was also a moment of that this had to be done so that I could actually move in another direction for myself and to discover what's actually available to me in life. So that was January of 2010. I still, as you see, have not let go of that name, the Music Within Us. I transitioned that into this new field that I had been training in alongside the Sound, Voice, and Music Healing, which is life coaching. And I kept the name and have been doing coach for people in transition. Basically, I've experienced professional burnout, people who want their creativity, people who want to take toward a more authentic way of living. And these that I started learning at that time and I keep myself.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There is a great deal to be said about how it impacts us. And a lot of it was just the other day they had a CD and it was music to animal, your dog. And I said, well, you know what? That makes sense because I remember it's pneumonia, and the way they got me through the day, a repeating record player. This is back in the mid 50s. It played the 1812 Overture, and over again. I can tell you that whole to finish to this day, but it kept me happy, and you can see it. You know the thing is, and maybe you can help out on this, bring the music to the situation to results.
In terms of therapeutic results?
Yeah,
that's a huge area. There's more and more research that's being done, figuring that out. It's really interesting. I think we've, as humans, have known almost since the beginning of recorded history and before that, that sound has power to heal, to transform, to all of these things. Calming is one aspect, but also to facilitate celebration and ritual and solemnity when we need that. So music is fundamental. I don't have a formula for, you know, how is the right music for this. We have a feeling, wishing that we just know what feels right situation. But it's also like any art. So what has one effect on may have a different effect on another, and it's by culture. So one of the things that I really woke up to during this 9-month experience at the Sound Voicing Program is our idea harmony and dissonance is a cultural construct too. So if I grew up like I did listening to Western music with piano interval, that's different from in Tibet or India where they have that there's, you know, hundreds of tones in between each of the keys that they identify and can hear, but we them because they're not present, but they exist. So they have a lot of different play in between our ears simply are not accustomed to. But for them in their culture, because intrinsic to it, it's embraced, it's celebrated, it's part of, you know, beautiful, but we might immediately say, oh, strange. So that in addition to improvisation, the biggest impact that that my life was to open up my to much expansive possibilities beyond this Western classical idea, beyond even Western music in general, to sound. So the vibration of all things. And what is our experience of sound before we identify and label it as music or not?
Wow, that's a lot when you think about it, because how much culture does play. And when you look at even modern music, I mean, I've got a couple of, you know, they're in semitones. Got a tuning device over here that goes in between the semi. We don't go in between the semitones. Look at Western music, the rock we play. It's all the classical instruments, definition of what's a key, and with that. And, you know, I think one of the big things that happened with rock music, Beatles got involved with Ravi Shankar, and all of a sudden you had this instrument that was putting out different sounds, but you know what? It was liked.
And people loved it.
And it went over well. It is tough when you first listen to it. You have to say, this is very different. And this is one of your cards, which I think is to be brought out, is you talk about musical healing, a life coach, and you alluded to it earlier. How exactly is that working for you?
Well, these two trainings for me began at the same time. So I began trainings, but they happened at the same time in my life. And life coaching is really about, you know, I guess I would say that I became as at my school. I find teaching the children, but I looked at a lot of attitudes toward learning, and I saw that in a lot of cases that was the child's learning. So I became interested in how do adults change, if at all. And life coaching came to me as a possible modality to facilitate change in adults, not in a teaching way, like telling you how to do it, but actually facilitating finding a new answer inside yourself. So that's really what coaching is for me. Coaching is still a kind of new burgeoning area that's not quite regulated and good. So every coach is different. There are financial coaches, there are relationship coaches. These days is really focused on, like I said, creativity. Working artists are at a what they would call a block or transition, or to just some kind of conversation in another creative person to facilitate that. Or I've done also a lot of coaching for physicians who want to leave medicine, which requires creative thinking. And, you know, like my story from 50, advice, well, paradigm is we don't know what's out there. You're on your, or, you know, the are limited to work in the pharmaceutical industry, Wall Street job or venture capitalizing or something. So they're sort of like a menu of options. When I talk to physicians leaving medicine, it is actually to have some express of their own creativity in their lives that's missing. Conversation never happens in medical school.
Because the corollary is school, they teach you the law, but not how to practice law. I want to move next to melodrama, because when I first saw that, I said, oh, she must be in plays or, you know, like kabuki theater or something that I'm not familiar with. And then, you know, obviously I discovered something different. But let's talk about Chinese melodrama. You've gotten together with Randy Bales, and I've listened to some of your stuff, and I like it.
Thank you.
It's innovative, it's new, and it's fun to listen to. So before I steal your thunder, let you have it back again.
Thank you. That's funny. I love to hear people's responses to our name. We met in 2000, six months after this Play the Wrong Note experience. And I was really conscious of improvisation after having down for a few months and working just breath, where I had no preconceived ideas, but about whether I could improvise on violin. And if you know, many violinists, it's rare classical violinist improvises. It's just opportunities. And I ended up at a meetup group, actually. And this is how far away from, you know, that I was. I didn't know people got together and people music for fun. I had only ever played in organized groups and, you know, things in public. So this was new to me. I was a little bit, didn't know what to expect. And I took it and I met a lot of great people that night. Randy was one of them. He'd already been playing and he invited, and I didn't, you know, I had no idea. People played these shops and bars and stuff. And we started, we have created some really interesting sounds, I think, with me improvising. Randy plays acoustic guitar and he sings and he writes lyrics and music. And I play on top of that. And we do have one EP that we've, LP? Yeah, EP?
CD,
LP. A CD. I don't know. We have one CD that we've released. And we also do play a lot in the community at the farmer's market. New Leaf, Hop Dogma,
Pumpkin Festival.
Yeah, we've played at a lot of the great local events where we've met and been embraced by this community, and it's been really fun.
And by the way, the other thing on your website, you will find where you are playing, and hopefully that's also showing up on CoastsideBuzz.com in the entertainment section, so that people listening, you know, can go out and catch you. I want to catch you guys live, and I'm a total believer in live music, not as opposed to dead music, but as opposed to recorded and listening to it, because there is something about seeing the musician being in the room, and there are some things that a recording just doesn't give you. So I've always been a believer, and I always love it, and so I look forward to that. But people, make sure you check out the that would be on the Chinese Melodrama site. So ChineseMelodrama.com does have Randy and Lisa's schedule, and it also should be on CoastsideBuzz.com. And I keep repeating the .coms and everything so that people remember it, because some of us need to be told things multiple times for us to register. But if nothing else, I want people to, after they finish listening to this, to be able to go to these websites and get more information. And the other thing I do want to throw out, and this is another plug maybe for a competitor, but I listened to an interview that you did on KMVT, which is a local station in a cable station in Mountain View, and it's an interview that Rusty King did. And I really recommend people listen to that, because they'll get further insight, more than we've gotten in here today. The other thing is when you Google KMVT, you're going to find a radio or a TV station in Twins Falls, Idaho. That's not the KMVT that you want. So look for one that talks about Mountain View and Silicon Valley, and you'll be able to find it there. And as I said, it's really a great in-depth interview and the more insight into you. But back to Chinese Melodrama, or excuse me, I'm going to move on a little bit, because there was one thing I found on one of your sites that fascinated me. You created a project for yourself, and that was to do 50 works of art in 50 days. And yes, I did look at all 50, by the way. So why don't you tell us about that?
That was actually a project that is has been done, and I was part of it, I believe, for the last 10 years at Sanchez Art Center in Pacifica. I would have to look up how many years they've been doing it, but it's a show called 50-50 that is a juried exhibition, and every artist in that show is invited to make 50 small artworks in 50 days, same dimensions. Everyone has the same exhibit space at Sanchez Art Center. So I was fortunate enough to be selected to participate in that show 2 years ago. So I just wanted to clarify that I didn't create that project on my own, but I got chosen to do it, and I did complete it. And that was really the start of a daily art practice. I picked up my first paintbrush in 2013 as part of this whole creative awakening process. I never thought I could draw or paint or do any kind of visual art. But I liked it, and I started just exploring. And then when I started to really get more excited about it, I got involved in this show, and that started a daily practice and practice of completing art in a certain amount of time. And it was a really great experience. And I would say that kind of catapulted what I'm doing currently, which is continuing to do daily art. And I would say that's become central to my life at this point, is my daily art practice.
Well, I'm going to talk about your art practice because your art practice was an impediment to us getting together so we could have this interview. And it's a rather, you know, if you got to have a speed bump, this is a real positive speed bump because I'd like you to tell our listeners about Gettysburg. Sure. And that experience.
And so that is a project that I created for myself, inspired by my love of national parks, and which is a California phenomenon for me because I wasn't an outdoor person until I moved to California. So I've fallen in love with national parks and just the phenomenon of, you know, having these spaces where anyone can go and experience the most beautiful parts of our country. And I wanted to bring my art into that. And so there was a program offering artist residencies at national parks. And I applied and was actually a finalist, which shocked me because it's really, you know, a worldwide application. And so when I reapplied, I said, you know, since I already have thought about what I want to do there and I've set aside this time, I'm going to go anyway, even if I don't get sponsored by that organization. So that's how I got to Gettysburg. I went sponsored by myself and found my own accommodations through VRBO, the website, and I actually ended up meeting an amazing host and hostess who live in Gettysburg and are really involved in the community, which is a, you know, smaller rural community. They're involved in the farmers market, they're involved in land conservancy, so I've got to find these sort of threads that really reminded me of life here and to see how they did things over there. So it was really a very rich experience. I was doing art every day. I did a small show, a works in progress show there that was hosted by my VRBO host, which is amazing. Like, you know, they invited all their friends and I got to meet a lot of great people. And I also got to see beyond the national park, you know, into the community, what people were doing. One example is a, you know, a therapeutic horse program that is just huge. They do cart driving with senior citizens with a wheelchair accessible cart, and they get to drive the horse. And I just saw people light up when they got on that cart. So I learned a lot too, because I'm not a Civil War history buff or history buff at all, but you can't go to Gettysburg and not hear about the history. So I became really, and I would say that I was originally very interested in doing Gettysburg this year in 2016 for two reasons. One is this is the National Parks Centennial, 100 years of National Park service in the United States. And second is, you know, given politically what's happening in 2016 and kind of watching the divide that's happening in our beliefs, or at least our conversations in this country, and how could Lincoln's Gettysburg Address actually inform us today? How, you know, by revisiting what was happening at that time and understanding it. So that was kind of the framework. And what I came back with was, you know, that we're on a long journey in this country of, we've had many conflicts, you know, internal conflicts of philosophies and ideologies and beliefs and policies. And part of our democracy is about conversation and learning how to have productive conversations from all different points of view. And, you know, what does that take? So I think, you know, this show that I'm doing, I don't know if we're on to that yet. Are we?
Yeah, we are. Okay.
The show that I'm putting up at our Half Moon Bay Library, which, yes, does have a location. I've already gotten asked several times, is there a library? Yes. The temporary location for the next 2 years is at Shoreline Station, which is next to the Yellow Caboose. And we have a beautiful library space there with high ceilings and plenty of space to hang art. So I'm putting up a show there that I'm going to give an artist talk on November 13th. That's a Sunday at 4:00. And the show itself will be up until December 22nd. But I'm going to give the talk on November 13th, about a week after the election, 2 days after Veterans Day. Perfect time to kind of revisit, because no matter who wins, there's going to be about half of the country that's going to have to deal with emotions and, you know, reconciliation. And my hope is that by you know, taking a human, I would say that, you know, my illustrations are whimsical and very relatable, and they bring us back to our fundamental humanity, and that helps. It helps to talk to other humans, to create connections. I think it's hard to feel connected to headlines and things that are made to divide us. But when we go down to human experience level, we can all understand each other. And that's really the, if there's any intention, it's sort of inviting people to ask if that happens for them.
You know, it's interesting. I pointed out I have one of these, you know, a smartphone that does everything for me. And, you know, I do email, I text, and all the rest of it. I'm as bad as anyone else. And don't try to take my phone away from me, please. But the one thing I found, and you alluded to it and actually threw it out there, and that's a lot of times a face-to-face conversation can save a lot of time, trouble, and get things where they need to be. And, you know, I applaud you for coming up with that, because it's, you've got a lot of followers with that particular philosophy.
Great.
So do you have any off the tip of your head, off the top of your head, one of these days I'll learn how to speak English. It is my second language, by the way. No, it's true, it is. Any upcoming appearances of Chinese melodrama locally?
Yes, we have we're booked at the Coastside Farmers Market on November 12th. That's Saturday, November 12th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., also at Shoreline Station. That's our last Farmers Market gig of 2016.
This will make my wife very sad, because she goes to Farmers Market every week, and she's going to have to miss that one because we're out of town that weekend, unfortunately. So I won't be able to go there either, because I would have gone to listen. All right, with that, do you have anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, there is one more thing that's kind of the newest thing that I'm doing related to the Gettysburg Project and just my art in general, is I have a Patreon page, which Patreon is very new. It's a San Francisco-based platform for becoming an arts patron. It's really crowdsourced arts patronage. So you can donate to independent artists on an ongoing basis. So it's different from a Kickstarter or Indiegogo, which is for single projects and usually is raising a larger sum of money. This is about, having a place to support your artists on a monthly ongoing basis. And it is a website. It's easy. It's patreon.com/Lisa Chu. And that's Patreon. And I just launched that, so it's just getting off the ground, and I just want to get the word out, because I think it's a really important platform for us to remember again, you know, in this day and age of a lot of free content and the need for independent artists to share content freely. It's also time to remember this age-old practice of supporting people who are creating great things that enrich the culture. So if you like what you've heard or like anything that you see that I'm doing, please take a look at my Patreon page.
And so that again is
patreon.com/Lisa Chu.
Okay, that's easy enough. And so that's patreon.com/Lisa Chu. And that, along with the other two websites, ChineseMelodrama.com and TheMusicWithinUs.com, will keep you well informed. And also, like I say, the interview on KMVT with Rusty King is another way to spend some worthwhile time and get to know Lisa a little better. Okay, anything else? I mean, you just have projects coming out one right after the other.
Yes, I'm busy and happy. So, I'm really thrilled to be able to share it, and thanks so much for interviewing me, Harry.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. We try with this to get people to know our local musicians and to know what they're up to and what sort of things there are and where they're appearing, so they can go listen to music and, in this case, also go see the artwork. Because, you know, music is not just about music. In fact, there's a genre of collecting of album covers or CD covers, because some of them are very collectible. Mm-hmm. But you have an incredible past. And if your past is any indication of your future, and there's a whole science behind that called regression analysis, I had to take some math somewhere in the background of my mind. I see your future doing nothing else. It's you have an incredible string of successes, and success tends to build upon itself. I've learned a lot, and I very much enjoyed, you know, getting online and doing research before this interview, so I didn't walk in, well, who are you? I had an idea of who you were, and, you know, all I can say is you have tremendous capacity, and just what you've done so far, and you're still very young, you've got a lot more to go, and I think a lot more to contribute, and thank you for being here, because I appreciate the opportunity to have chatted with you, and now I look forward to seeing more of your music and listening, seeing more of your artwork and listening to more of your music. Does that work better?
Well, we could play with that, right? What is the sound of art and what does music look like? So, you know, it could be interchangeable. That's an interesting idea here.
Well, actually, you can take music and put it on an oscilloscope and sound, and there is visualization to music and all sound.
Yes.
But we'll leave that for another day. Dr. Lisa Chu, thank you so much for being with us. And this is Harry the Y, and look forward to other interviews and other music. Again, check out CoastsideBuzz.com. There's a whole bunch of stuff on there, and it'll keep you busy for a long time. Lisa, thank you for being here, and the best of luck to you.
Thank you, Harry.